Welcome to Life Quest Liberty, live in-depth conversations with today's top writers, editors, and spiritual leaders concerning religious freedom around the world. On today's broadcast, we'll examine local and international factors that may be impacting your right to worship and obey God as your conscience dictates. I'm your Life Quest Liberty host, Charles Mills. The 1960s was a decade of unrelenting turbulence in this country. Anyone who lived through it would agree that nothing has been the same since. One of the waves of change splashed ashore in Washington, D.C. when a young man by the name of John Fitzgerald Kennedy took the oath of office with the presidential command to ask not what our country can do for us, but what we can do for our country. Many Protestant Christians squirmed in their seats that day. What was going to happen now that there was a Catholic occupying the driver's seat of the nation? Well, what did happen? Let's talk with Lincoln Steed, editor of Liberty Magazine, about those heady days. Lincoln, you and I were both very young men at that time, both being raised in Christian homes. What thoughts went through your mind as Kennedy raised his right hand?
Well, I had a small mind and a small body back then. I was not even a young man. I was a young boy.
Oh, okay. All right.
But I do remember Kennedy very well. And I was living in Australia then, where I was born and raised. Didn't leave Australia till my teens. Mm-hmm. But, man, I remember Kennedy. He made a big impact all around the world. Certainly a very big impact in the English-speaking world. And Australians watched with bated breath as he ran for president. It was interesting from a number of points of view. He was a young, charismatic war hero. Mm-hmm. His story had been told, as you remember, by his, as I remember, it was his speechwriter, Ted Sorensen, who had written Profiles of Courage,
yes,
which really, very much like Obama's book, Tales of My Father or Stories of My Father. Mm-hmm. So he was well known internationally as an icon of bravery and of someone who was setting a new pattern. But particularly in Australia, that new pattern occurred to us that here in a Protestant nation, the United States of America, which had been so defined in its, throughout its history by its Protestant character,
yes,
seemed on the verge of electing a Roman Catholic president. And I can't say that back then anyone much was aware of the U.S. Constitution that very particularly says no religious test for public office. Mm-hmm. We just knew that there had never been a Catholic president before. We expected it to be a Protestant. And here this charismatic figure looked early on like he would do it. And, of course, Richard Nixon was his opposite, and Richard Nixon, who later served okay until he was impeached. but Richard Nixon at that time had the experience, but if not the gravitas, but unfortunately he also had the 5 o'clock shadow that didn't play so well. And this was one of the first presidential campaigns that was conducted through the media. Mm-hmm. They had television debates and so on, and mm-hmm. Kennedy came off just looking inspiring, mm-hmm. youthful, young. Before the program, you and I were rehearsing the Bostonian accent. He was very unique. Uh-huh. So on one level, we were excited. This was a new generation. There were new ideas, but what would he do with his Catholicism? Mm-hmm. You know, in early Americana, there were often open attacks against popery. The Ku Klux Klan, as I've said on this program before, was not just a violently racist organization. It primarily was dedicated to maintaining a Protestant America. And of course, they did it very prejudicially. But it was important to Americans to be Protestant at that point.
Did you get a sense, Lincoln, from your dad? Your dad was a church worker for decades, a very dedicated church worker. Was there any indication from him? I remember from my dad, there was a little concern. The bated breath was being held in this country as well among Seventh-day Adventist Christians. Was there concern in your family that what's going to happen now?
I can't remember anything my father particularly said, but very likely I was getting my cues from him.
Yes.
And I know that I picked up on the idea that Seventh-day Adventists, following prophecy closely, many of them, and I know, yes, I know my father did see a possible fulfillment of prophecy where the United States, a lamb-like beast, mm-hmm. at some latter point toward the end of time would actually become aggressive and coercive in its religious agenda. Mm-hmm. And yes, we thought maybe This is when it happens. This is how it happens. Yeah. Even though there was little evidence from Kennedy himself, but just to be a Roman Catholic president in a Protestant country, whoa, you know, where was this coming from? And at the time, I was aware of some of the things he said, but recently I've gone back and looked at his speech, and it's an icon of principles for maintaining a separation of church and state and a healthy religious, certainly Protestant, but also Catholic identity in the United States. That's what I want to talk about today. That's the focus of why we're doing this little retrospective.
I have to ask, Lincoln, when Kennedy came to power in this country, the Catholic Church, the Pope, the Vatican, were they rubbing their hands in glee? I mean, as we look back in hindsight, were they saying, finally, we have somebody here representing us who can get some things done in that runaway country called America?
It's quite possible. I don't remember, and I was at a bit of a distance, them saying too much publicly, but I'm sure, because we were already into the phase of the resurgence of Rome's power. Remember, Rome had been emasculated in 1798 by Napoleon when he'd taken the Pope prisoner. Yeah. Then he'd become really an also-ran in Europe. It was Mussolini in World War II, which was not that long before John F. Kennedy, only about less than 20 years after the close of World War II till Kennedy came along. And Mussolini was the one that breathed a little life back into the Vatican. You know, they'd been very powerless in the build-up to World War II. About the only thing I can remember historically that the Vatican had been able to effect was trouble in the Balkans.
Yes.
Through their proxy, Croatia. And we don't want to get into that. It's a very tawdry tale. But Mussolini, ironically, as a secular fascist dictator, he tilted his hat toward the Vatican, and in the Lateran Treaty that he conducted with the Catholic leadership, he gave them some land and a pseudo-state status at that point. And, of course, after the fall of Mussolini and the fall of Nazism in Germany, the Roman Catholic Church continued as a well, they claim they're a state now.
Yeah.
So they were feeling their oats, and no doubt that with Kennedy apparently coming into office, they were just rubbing their hands. And one thing they must have hoped, but we'll talk about it in the speech, they must have hoped that they would have close diplomatic relations with the United States.
Well, let's find out what happened, Lincoln. You have set the stage beautifully for us here. I'm sitting on the edge of my chair. What happened next?
Well, what happened was very much like what's happening today with Mitt Romney is the apparent candidate. Things are not quite settled down, but I think he's going to be the candidate for the Republicans to challenge President Obama. And the vilification of him as a Mormon is quite amazing. Mm-hmm. Now, I have no brief for Mormonism. You know, it's not in the mainstream of what you'd say is Christianity. But some Christians have called it a non-Christian organization. They've maligned him as dangerous for the country if he were elected and so on. And it's very reminiscent of when Kennedy ran. Kennedy made a great speech back when he was running that really denatured the same sort of attacks that he received that we see today with Mitt Romney. And this is what I want to dwell on. He made a speech before the election in 1960 to the Greater Houston Ministerial Association. Very appropriate place to talk about religion. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I think that the presidential candidates nowadays, they talk about religion not just gratuitously, they use it as a political weapon.
Oh, yes.
to co-opt some of the electorate. And you know, they'll pretty much give the idea that they're going to be a pastor in chief when they talk to some religious groups, and then with others they'll talk differently. Mm-hmm. But Kennedy was very appropriate, I think, in what he said on that occasion. And he directly addressed the fact that he was a Roman Catholic seeking this high office. And I don't want to go through the whole speech, but there are two paragraphs that just set the tone for his campaign and, thankfully, for his presidency. And this is what he said. I'd like to read it for our listeners. He says, "I believe in an America where the separation of church and state is absolute, where no Catholic prelate would tell the president, should he be Catholic, how to act, and no Protestant minister would tell his parishioners for whom to vote, where no church or church school is granted any public funds or political preference. Hmm. And where no man is denied public office merely because his religion differs from the president who might appoint him or the people who might elect him. I believe in an America, he said, that is officially neither Catholic, Protestant, nor Jewish, where no public official either requests or accepts instructions on public policy from the Pope, the National Council of Churches, or any other ecclesiastical source, where no religious body seeks to impose its will directly or indirectly upon the general populace or the public acts of its officials, and where religious liberty is so indispensable that an act against one church is treated as an act against all. Wow. They're inspiring words.
It certainly is. Wow.
We featured that recently on the back of Liberty Magazine as one of our quotable quotes, and I think it was very appropriate. But just this weekend, actually, I sat down and started to pen an editorial for Liberty Magazine, and I pulled those words and looked at them, and it suddenly hit me. We have come light years from that point. Light years. Now, you can say that it's to some degree he was putting out an ideal, but whatever you might think about President Kennedy's actual presidency, and, you know, he had some ups and downs and a great crisis with the Cuban Missile Crisis, there's really no evidence that he deviated from this goal on his church-state issues. About the closest I can think of, and it's really by inference, the Vietnam tragedy may have gotten underway because of a certain sympathy toward a Catholic dictator in South Vietnam. I remember Diem was a Catholic, but you can get just as good an evidence that the U.S. was entangled because of its faulty view of the dominoes of communism, and they wanted to stop it somewhere, France had been bloodied there and was pulling out, and so the U.S. wanted to save the situation. But there is a little historical argument that his Catholic sympathy perhaps led to that entanglement. But beyond that, nothing. In fact, I can remember very clearly as a young fellow observing those years of the Kennedy presidency, and he offended a lot of groups. You know, he through his brother, he offended the mafia. He offended the communists by taking a very hard line. And he did offend his own church because he did not act as their proxy.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's just zero evidence in domestic governance that he tilted toward the Catholics. And I think that the proof of that is a public statement about a year, not much more than a year ago, that came out from the Catholic bishops. And they said that they had made a huge mistake in the Kennedy presidential election in not holding him to the dictates of his church, and that they were not going to make that mistake this time around. So, you know, that's both a vindication of Kennedy's presidency and a little warning of where we are now. Or, you know, for any church to say that is wrong.
Yes.
And the separation of church and state has to be meaningful, and Kennedy, I think, did give meaning to that. Now, he made another statement a little bit later in his speech, and I'm hunting for it here. He said he would be very careful in maintaining this separation, and he said, I have opposed funds for schools and for an ambassador to the Vatican.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. I'd somewhat forgotten that, but he opposed us sending a formal ambassador to the Vatican, which is the one thing that I harp on in Liberty Magazine.
Yes,
you know, we can't easily malign another church. It's not right under religious liberty models. But we can criticize a church that functions as a state, because that is the the baseline mortal threat to the separation of church and state. And because of that, Protestant America was very reticent to send an ambassador to a religious entity, in essence. And it was really not till much later, I think it was Nixon, when he became president, he sent an emissary, and it was Reagan that formally appointed an ambassador, not Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
Did not happen in Kennedy's time.
Millard Fillmore, during the 1856 presidential election, said, "I am tolerant of all creeds, yet if any sect suffered itself to be used for political objects, I would meet it by political opposition. In my view, church and state should be separate, not only in form, but fact. Religion and politics should not be mingled." A reminder from your friends at www.libertymagazine.org. We're talking with Lincoln Steed, editor of Liberty Magazine, about the Kennedy connection. We're looking back in time. I know a lot of our listeners, Lincoln, are nodding their heads and remembering with us those years when Kennedy took office. The Catholic Church was going to take over the world. And what we're discovering, Lincoln, what you're telling us, is that Kennedy did not act like he was a hardcore Catholic when it came to politics, and that's exactly what he should have done. In other words, he was the kind of president that Mitt Romney needs to be, that anybody that comes along, that Obama needs to be. These are the kinds of president we need to have here who look and say, okay, you have the freedom to be who you want to be, to believe the way you want to believe, but that's going to be very separate from this office. Am I right?
Absolutely. By the way, I found those words.
Sure.
This is exactly what he said. He spoke of my declared stance against an ambassador to the Vatican, against unconstitutional aid to parochial schools. And he said, this is the kind of America I believe in.
Well, that's the kind of America we need. And let me ask you right out of here, Lincoln, are we heading in that direction or are we heading in the opposite direction?
Well, you know, think about the campaign.
Yes.
Michelle Bachmann said separation of church and state is not in the Constitution. That's bizarre. We had Senator Santorum saying some really crazy stuff. In particular, he said that Kennedy's speech made him want to vomit. I think he used a more colloquial term.
Yes.
He wanted to throw up. Yep. Puke, I think, was the word he used.
Yes.
So, you know, and then the most bizarre one, which I don't think anyone takes seriously, but if he were elected, you'd better take it seriously, was Newt Gingrich saying that on matters of church and state or religious freedom issues, judges acting differently than I guess he would expect would be brought before Congress, questioned and demanded that they change it. If not, they would be ejected.
Oh,
you know.
My.
So if nothing else, and Newt Gingrich would play havoc with the separation of powers between the judiciary, the legislative, and the executive. That's part of the very protection of all of our liberties. And on the point of religious liberty, he'd throw that out. We've come a long way, but the wrong way.
Yes.
What I did in the editorial, and in the few minutes we have left, I want to trace through the particular things that Kennedy said and where are we now. Like, for example, he says, I believe in an America where separation of church and state is absolute. Well, Michelle Bachmann's statement shows it's not absolute. You listen to many in the religious right and they mock. They just mock the concept as erroneous and even unconstitutional, which is rude because it's not. It is straight from the Constitution. We've got reason to worry about protecting the separation of church and state. Then he says, where no Catholic prelate would tell the president how to act. Well, that statement from the Catholic Church shows that they're ready to tell him.
They wanted to tell him.
ready to tell the modern-day Kennedy, if it were a Santorum. Yep. Doesn't look like he'll be the one, but the dynamic is ready to do what they were restrained from decades ago. Mm-hmm. And I made the comment that the warning on that should be what we're observing in Iran, where there's a political dance between the Ayatollah, the grand leader of the national Islamic religion in Iran, and the president of Iran. A total power play, and we should not get into those sort of power plays between religious forces and political. Then he said this. He says he believed in America where no Protestant minister would tell his parishioners for whom to vote.
Oh man.
I mean, right. I wrote, sounds quaint, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Like we've had voter guides and ministers from the pulpit telling their parishioners who to vote for, what to vote on, what party to go for. I mean, we're so far past that it's amazing to me that the tax-exempt status of some churches has been maintained because they're not supposed to be political. And then he says this one, where no church, he believes in an America, where no church or church school is granted any public funds or political preference.
Oh,
again,
dear.
You know, I said, how the world has changed. Any public funds. How would church schools survive without government money?
Yeah.
It's not just they take a little money, a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the faith-based initiative that I've often spoken about that President Obama has continued under a different name. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a blatant, raw, not an attempt, a movement to use state monies and funnel it through the churches, initially under the fiction that it would be for secular activities run by the church. Mm-hmm. But that was soon dropped, and there's not such a concern that whether or not they're promoting their faith agenda on public money. You know, that's just another universe than President Kennedy was dealing with. Then let's look further. He says, I believe in an America where no religious body seeks to impose its will directly or indirectly upon the general populace or the public acts of its officials.
Oh, my.
Well, you know, we don't know what's happening behind diplomatic doors in dealings with Rome as a political power. But, you know, the last few weeks, my take on most of the discussion of the healthcare debate, while we need to be careful that individuals and churches are not strong-armed by the state, basically this was a church attempting to push back and project its particular viewpoint on the larger population using government money. Mm-hmm. Just amazing, amazing. And then he says, I believe in an America where no man is denied public office merely because his religion differs from the president who might appoint him. So that's more like judges and so on. Well, I wouldn't so much single out this present administration, but for some decades now, it's been a highly charged process of who's put in a position, and particularly some of the conservatives. They have to have the right religious viewpoint. They have to have the right litmus test on a couple of key issues of faith. This thing with Mitt Romney, while individuals have the right to not vote for someone because they don't like that person's religion, that's another thing. But the general public discussion and prejudicial statements on his religion crosses that line, I think, where very close to disqualifying someone purely because of their religion.
You used an interesting phrase there. You said a litmus test. Whose litmus are we talking about? Where did that litmus come from? What organization is deciding, it seems across the board, whether someone is fit religiously for an office or not, or a judge or whatever? Where is it coming from?
You know, it's hard to say that because we don't have any centralized control. But more and more, I think the politically active religious forces are sort of coalescing around a center. And Chuck Colson led the way in brokering a coalition between Catholic and Protestant activist groups. Mm-hmm. So it isn't, you know, just Catholic or just Protestant. It's pretty much all Christian politically active groups that are salivating for power, and more and more able to act as, if not direct brokers, then very influential elements in sort of anointing who or who not they will allow to you know, get to the final elimination round for major office.
It seems like there's an organization, an unseen organization or power someplace, who is trying to form a core belief system that everyone needs to swirl around as they rise to power. That's a scary thought, as I think
about it. It's scary. I wouldn't oversell it as a conspiracy per se, but it's a coalition of similarly minded groups who are gaining more and more influence, and they're playing on the lack of historical and religious knowledge of the electorate, mm-hmm. who are more easily led and herded in these directions.
And here we are, Americans out here, who are clueless about the Constitution, clueless about our history. We just want to know what's going to be on television Thursday night.
Well, I want to end on the last point. President Kennedy said he believed in America that was neither Catholic nor Protestant. Mm-hmm. But in reality, this was an overwhelmingly Protestant society from the earliest days, and even through the presidency of Kennedy. And it remained to Senator Rick Santorum in 2008, speaking at a Catholic university. He said this amazingly correct but prejudicial statement. He says, Protestantism in this country is in shambles. It is gone from the world of Christianity as I see it. Mm. Mm. And that's the sad part, I think. Not that we need to reawaken the Ku Klux Klan or the religious wars of Europe following the Reformation, but a certain awareness of what defined Protestantism, which was the freedom of will that expressed itself in the very dynamic principle of religious freedom, separation of church and state, that needs to be kept alive.
Yes.
And it's drifting away. And for a Roman Catholic, good as he may be, although prejudice as he has proven to be in the campaign, mm-hmm. It shouldn't be. I think the American electorate needs to look to their history, look to their principles, and reassert themselves, not go as lambs to some slaughter. And the slaughter will probably be a loss of all liberties, not just religious freedom.
Is this part of a pushback we're seeing? If we have this core rising up, is this a pushback happening in the minds of some people?
Well, it's a pushback, but it's a pushback that is sort of the anti-problem to what they feared with Romanism.
Yeah.
Romanism had a sense that it was the true faith, it was the magisterium, that was the custodian of faith, and you obeyed their dictates, or there might be severe civil and religious penalties.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we don't want that to develop with Protestantism either.
No.
There needs to be a Protestantism that, as was expressed in the Declaration of Independence, that spoke about these self-evident, inalienable rights,
yes.
The right to appeal to God personally, the right to allow others to think that, to a self-determination that respected religion but didn't impose it.
Hmm. Well, we're going to keep a sharp eye on this as the months go by and as things happen. That's why Liberty Magazine exists. That's why this program exists, to keep you, listener, informed of what's going on. I know I learned a lot on this program today. Lincoln Steed, very, very good. Thank you so much for sharing
with us. It's been a pleasure.
And also, listener, we have a website for you to visit, www.libertymagazine.org. Check it out. Lots of good material there for you to learn and to educate yourself in what's happening around the world and right next door to you, too. That's libertymagazine.org. Until next time, this is Charles Mills, along with Lincoln Steed, editor of Liberty Magazine, inviting you to rest in the freedom of God's love. Goodbye, everyone. You've been listening to Life Quest Liberty. To further explore the issues discussed on today's program, visit www.libertymagazine.org. Join us again next week at this same time as we examine more of the threats and challenges facing your religious freedom. May God keep the flames of religious freedom burning in your heart today.